Morning and welcome to Everton Business Matters. My name's Tom Martin. I'm here on the 12th of December 2019 at 23 minutes past nine as Britain heads to the polls. But we've got far more important matters to discuss. I'm here with John Blaine and Paul the Esk. Paul, good morning.
Morning, gents. How are you all?
Very well, thank you. Where are you in the world today?
I'm on the end of a telephone on Skype.
Keeping it secret, James Bond.
Well, you might not be in the United Kingdom, Paul, but we are at the centre of the universe, Tom and I, because we're in Liverpool City Centre.
On the front line.
Yeah, on the front line, as they say. So let's do this. What should we talk about?
Well, we were talking just off air about how Marco Silva was sacked at the beginning of last week after the Merseyside derby debacle. Paul, you referred to this and the appointment of Duncan Ferguson in an article as our lowest point. Was that not a bit dramatic?
No, I don't think it was, actually. I tried to create context in the article by explaining how we got to the point where we got. And I suppose the lowest point, the reference is not so much to Duncan Ferguson, it is the lowest point of the Mashiri era, which is coming up to 4 years in February. There is clearly evidence that the organisation as a whole has not advanced at any point in that time. And given the fact that we now have a director of football and the director of football sits on the board, one would have thought going into a situation like this where a manager is clearly struggling, we would have processes and we would be much further down the road of having an alternative than we actually either appear to be last week when I wrote the article, or indeed as we appear to be now. I have a terrible feeling that this is it's going to be sort of November 2017 revisited when we fired Ronald Koeman.
It's funny, Paul, because maybe I'm just an eternal Evertonian optimist after 50-odd years ago in the game. But I agree with what you just said, and I'll perhaps add to it, hopefully, as well. Although I do disagree with the fundamental premise that it's our lowest point, because I think, frankly, the lowest point, as you started to allude to, was 2 years ago, when we had Mr. Allardyce as our manager. I think that was the lowest point. But the principle of what you say is spot on. We haven't appeared to have learned anything about what happened last time. And I've spoken to many friends around this, and you perhaps will agree with me, Paul, and we can talk about it. One would have hoped that May, June time this year, we did a post-season review at board level of what happened last season. You know, did we do what we wanted in and around the transfer market? Did we do what we wanted in and around performance in the Premier League, the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup? Have we achieved objectives? If we didn't, why was that? What were we going to do about it next time? And so on. You would anticipate that had that happened, right in the crosshairs would have been the almost sacking the manager mid-season because of really poor performances. And when that was discussed, and clearly Marcel Brands stuck up for Silva, during the season, because I think perhaps some of the key stakeholders might have been, particularly the ones who appointed Allardyce, might have thought, crikey, let's get rid of this man again. Yeah. So if we did that, you would have anticipated, well, what should we do if it happens again?
Well, John, picking up on Brands, do you not think that that's a very public undermining of him a week after his dreaded vote of confidence in Silva to be immediately struck back by those above him?
Yeah, I don't know, because circumstances change, don't they? We've talked about Bramley Moore and say projects go late one day at a time. Yeah. A day or a game is a long time in football. It's curious, but I think to get back to the track, we must have thought, what happens if this manager gets himself into the same situation again? What are we going to do? And the scenarios are not too difficult to document. You know, we have a replacement on our list ready, per se, or we immediately appoint the first team coach, if that's what we do, which is sort of what Arsenal did, or whatever. And we seem to have, certainly from an outsider's view looking in, we seem to have done it in a very reactive sort of way. And I think that's the real criticism that you're laying at the door, isn't it, Paul?
Well, excuse me, sorry, I've got quite a bad throat. But it is. I mean, if we look at it chronologically, the Friday before the Leicester game, Marcel Brands makes his comments on video, and I personally didn't think it was the traditional sort of, you know, confidence vote that people get before they got the sack. I actually thought he genuinely meant what he said in terms of giving Silva support. We had, you know, a good performance at Leicester, which unfortunately ended in defeat, but. I think a lot of people felt that some positives came out of that performance, and then obviously the derby match was a complete disaster for both for the club and, you know, obviously for Silva. It reminded me very much of the 2016 derby match when John Woods walked out just after half time, and clearly something happened at or around the derby match. It was odd, for example, that both Mashiri and Bill Kenwright weren't present at the derby, albeit that they were both here in the UK at that time. That was quite odd. And obviously, on the evening after the derby, on the Wednesday evening, late Wednesday evening, Andy Hunter, who, you know, is as honest a journalist as there is, had clearly been briefed that Silva was on his way, because at midnight he produced a piece that said, you know, effectively said that. And yet the following morning there were also briefings to say that Silva's fate had not been determined and he was still likely to stay. The fact then that everybody pitches up at Finch Farm in almost as a public a place as they possibly could, given, you know, all the press would be there and the press would be able to monitor the ins and outs as the day went on, I just thought was amazingly badly managed. It was amazingly badly managed. If the club thought, or if the leaders of the club thought at any point on Wednesday evening that something was likely to happen to Silva, surely they would have conducted that business in a more private environment. That may have meant everybody meeting in London, which wouldn't have been a problem because both Bill and Farhad were already in London, as it turns out. And I just think the whole process through the day was so awfully, awfully managed. In the article, I call it a stupefying 20 hours. And I really do think that was, you know, in so many ways, our lowest point.
Well, it was good of you, Paul, to resist. Yeah, sorry, mate. Sorry, cutting across. Yeah, but I thought it was going to be a party political broadcast then, because we're agreeing with you. I think you did well in your article to resist saying, "Is this how the People's Club actually manages people?" Because I think what they put Silva through on that day was torture, and it clearly is a big indication that. For me anyway, and again, Tom, I'd be interested what you think, mate, that was just playing on the whim of a single individual who was a law unto himself, which was obviously the largest shareholder, who you can just visualise saying, "I'll come to Finch Farm." And then everybody just has to sit around waiting, yeah, until he turns up to decide what's going to happen next.
Well, I think there needs to be a more clinical, ruthless edge to the club in that sense. But also, like you said, better man management. Yeah, and you can combine the two, can't you? You can sack someone effectively and compassionately. I think the two are mutually exclusive.
Dismissing people, which sadly I've had to do in my day job, and perhaps Paul has as well, is never easy.
Yeah.
But one of the things that resonated with me when we sacked Koeman was his response to get the curly finger when Mr. Elston and Bill turned up was, "I'm not surprised." And to a degree, whether he was just fronting it up, perhaps Silva was a bit more surprised. And then he was put on death row for 10 hours, you know, walking around the fields of Finch Farm, while, as you say, in a very public way, Paul, members of the board sit in a meeting room somewhere debating what to do.
Am I right in saying the chronology of the day, I think it was reported in The Athletic, that there was a meeting between Farhad and the players before the sacking of Silva?
That's what most of the media reported, yeah, yes.
And also that Silva, it wasn't even reported to the players that Silva was going to get sacked, and they went home thinking that he was still in charge.
Yeah, and again, I think, I can't remember, Paul, whether it's in, but I'm sure this is in one of your articles as well. I would have anticipated that if the largest shareholder wanted to talk to the players, it would be to tell them what he thinks of them, really, after some pretty dire performances, you know, in previous weeks, rather than to say, guys, is there anything else we can give you to make you perform better? If you want to appeal to prima donnas who think they can turn up when they feel like it, that's what you do, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Paul, what can we learn? You were talking about, John was talking earlier, you think we'd learn the lessons from a few years ago. What can we learn moving forward about this sacking process, I guess? Because it'll happen again. I'm sure that the club is going
to
get...
Again, I spoke to a journalist quite recently and said, unless some fundamental adjustments are made, we'll be in this place again in 2 years' time.
Exactly, yeah. So what can we learn, Paul?
Let's just say, I'm going to say it as it is. You know, the whole thing lacked professionalism. We're an organisation that is supposed to pride itself in many aspects of what we do, one of which is it's supposed to be an excellent place to work.
We've got lots of awards that says we are.
Exactly. The club wins awards for being, you know, an excellent employer. This was a human resources disaster. So whoever has responsible for human resources within the organisation, you know, either that person or the person to whom that person reports to ought to be looking at themselves, or ought to be examined in terms of, you know, actually what went on and what went wrong.
Can we talk about that, Paul? Because, yeah? You know, for the listeners, I'm actually quite an advocate of this, because fundamentally, as I have done and you have done, if you're sitting in a boardroom and we've talked, haven't we, that the subject matter expert on the footballing side is Marcel Brands, but fundamentally the board make the decision. Therefore, actually, he's an expert advisor. The same with the HR director, if there is one, who undoubtedly reports into the Sparrow Baxendale. They advise on what best practice is. What they can't do, simply because of hierarchical authority, is make it happen. So what we're really saying here, are we not, that let's take an assumption that we do have people who know what best practice is from a HR perspective. We do have people who, from a public relations perspective, understand best practice. We do have communications people who understand best practice. But the people who make the decisions override their guidance and do it differently. Is that what we think is happening?
I think it is. And I think it reflects very badly on those people at the top of the organisation, because if they're true leaders, if they're people with, you know, great commercial experience in their careers, they would almost instinctively know how to behave, whether there was a process in place or not. And it seems to me that if there was a process, they ignored it, and in behaving instinctively as they did, they demonstrated, their weaknesses.
I think they have, and it's interesting if we look, from my perspective anyway, in the changing culture of the football club, which is moved from, over time, and it all coalesces around the same guy, which is Farhad Moshiri, but we've moved from Bill's preferred style, which is fundamentally, you know, wash your dirty linen out of public view. It's better to say nothing in many cases, rather than say anything at all. Therefore, it's radio silence, to playing these things out in the front of the public with film crews at train stations and film crews outside Finch Farm. I mean, you know, it's crazy.
It also feels like not the Everton way.
That's the point.
Like having watched Howard's Way earlier on in the week, it feels very, very anti the club's ethos. But I also think it's worth stating, one must commend the grace and maturity that Marco Silva handled the whole situation with.
Yeah, he's clearly, behaviourally, he's a low reactor, so it probably makes it easy for him to do that.
But I also think towards the end of his reign, you know, he always spoke of the joy and the pride for managing Everton Football Club and how it's not real pressure. And I've got to say, I really wish him well. I think he'll do well at another club. I just think this was a case of the right man at the wrong time.
It's interesting because, again, I'm going to spit out another one of my favourite soundbites, I suppose, which is, and it is, you know, you comment on this, Paul, because it's quite deep, but it doesn't take long to say. And I've said this to Bill, yeah, as far back as the Martinez situation, is people don't fail. Companies do. Mm-hmm. So Everton Football Club failed, but we take a temporary respite by blaming the manager, which we've done three times now. But it's the football club that fails because we clearly didn't give the manager what I would call the personnel support that he needed. I mean, crikey, we see the game against Chelsea with Duncan, you know, sort of invigorating the club and all that good stuff just through enthusiasm. And Ferguson has been on the first team coaching staff through all these managers. Some have used him, some have not. So where was the advice and guidance and the coaching and mentoring for the manager after last season to make the world better? Clearly the manager picks the players that he's given, but the manager has a boss and the boss is Marcel Brands. Mm-hmm. And if the manager is struggling, either communicating with the fans, communicating with the press, projecting, you know, his enthusiasms and those things which us Everton fans want to see in our manager, which has all been epitomised by, you know, let's say it, Klopp-type behaviour from Duncan Ferguson, but that enthusiasm is infectious, then he himself needs to be developed. And you just said the manager, perhaps the right man at the wrong time. You know, perhaps he wasn't mature enough for such a high-profile club or the expectations or whatever it is. But we know that when we appoint him. Mm. And therefore, every single employee should respectfully expect to get all the support that they need. And that support isn't just saying, I'll buy you whatever players you want.
Well, allow me to just unpack that right man at the wrong time. I feel that Everton are a club that are in transition. And Marco Silva's a manager that benefits from circumstances whereby he just has to tweak and he just has to make a few changes. Whereas I think there needs to be wholesale changes at the club right now. We need to find that ethos, that way of playing, similar to what Klopp's done at Liverpool, similar to what Pochettino managed at Tottenham. And, you know, Silva will be a great second manager in such a circumstance.
Quite possibly,
He'd be a great man to almost a Bob Paisley to a Bill Shankly. Not saying that Duncan Ferguson is Bill Shankly for those listening. But don't you think it was great, though, on Saturday, Paul, to see Everton playing with enthusiasm again and seeing the crowd be behind the manager and the club playing the way that we love?
I do, and I'll get on to that in a second. Just to add to what you both just said, I think what the club fails to recognise is that essentially football, like many businesses, is actually a people's business. You're very dependent upon the people that you recruit, both in terms of the management, the football management, and obviously the players. And therefore, the people are hugely important. And we don't seem to care enough. We don't seem to recognise that these individuals are enormous investments for the club. And as such, they should be cherished and nurtured. And they, you know, we as an organisation should allow them to become either better footballers or to become better managers or to become better communicators, whatever it is that they actually do for the organisation.
Well, you've just put me in mind, so for listeners out there, my background is in the arts and I spent many years working in theatres, and the artistic director of a top regional theatre who consistently wins awards for kind of excellence and stuff, I said, well, what's the secret? And his reply was really simple. He just said, I hire the best people. That's the long, short and tall of it. And I think, don't you think, Paul, that that's where Everton are going wrong?
I think we try to hire the best people, but ultimately, when, and I think this will be proven in terms of the management search that we're undergoing at the moment, when we actually engage with the people who are the very best in the industry, they see us for what we really are, and they see the errors and they see the shortcomings within the organization, within the individuals within the organization, and they choose then not to engage on that basis. And so in order to attract the very best, you have to offer the very best what it is that they expect. And I know it's difficult if you don't have the very best to do the very best, because poor people make poor decisions. But it's something that we have to improve upon. And it's something with, you know, people like Farhad Mashiri with the business experience that he has, even people like Bill Kenwright with his business experience, should be able to put enough together in terms of what they're going to present in terms of the structure around themselves to make themselves attractive, not just from a financial perspective, but make themselves attractive to excellent people from the perspective of, A, it's a great place to work. B, more importantly, possibly, it's a place that's going to enhance your career. And
we've been there before on this conversation, yeah? And as we've done recent podcasts, I've described, and I'm going to do it again, the manager and what's happened to this last manager and previous managers, they are symptoms of a bigger problem. Mm. And that bigger problem is structurally how the business is managed on a day-to-day basis and how it, I mean, you said briefly about the Everton way, and I think I've said on this pod before, I don't know what it is. I think if you ask 100 Evertonians, you get 100 different answers. I mean, we can all say, yes, the Everton way is to play beautiful football and all, you know, what the chants and the songs say. But I think that's part of it, I think, Paul. And if you have the right organisational structure with the right people in it and you operate to a proper, you know, strategic business plan, and you know what brand values you're going to express, and you know what type of organisations you want to work with, then we would have clarity and we would know what the kind of manager is that we want. Mm. We all took some comfort about the professionalism that Brands apparently exhibits when he's buying players, because he talks to them about where we're going to use you, how we're going to use you, where you need areas of development and all that good stuff. Come and join Everton and we'll give you the platform and the environment to become a better player. Well, that's the same message you could give to a senior executive. And in days gone by, and I think this perhaps to a degree stands true, once we got either a prospective player, manager, whatever you want to call it, into the office with Bill Kenwright, his passion and enthusiasm and all that good stuff would sell Everton very effectively. Mm. So he did it for years, yeah? But it's got lost, and it's got lost because we have a single all-powerful individual, yeah, who perhaps isn't asserting the authority he has to make the underlying structure more professional. Isn't that it in a nutshell?
I would challenge possibly whether Bill can sell Everton in the modern environment.
Sorry, in the way that. Well, feel free, Paul, feel free to challenge it, but I'm just repeating what people have told me, not him.
No, I get that, John. I just think that people expect more these days, and you know, the local guy made good, who no doubt loves the club, is no longer enough.
Oh, sorry, beg your pardon, Paul, and I am sorry for cutting across, but I agree. But when we got our billionaire, we expected to build on and enhance and improve all the structures and the processes that have been allowing us to bumble along with brief moments of success over the previous 20-odd years. And we've regressed.
Do we not think that Farhad's given up the impression, and I don't mean this as like a character assassination, but this kind of mad billionaire that is just kind of...
Eccentric
and whimsical. Yeah. And you know, we'll kind of call Sky Sports on a whim and then he'll appoint who he wants, and he'll panic, press the panic button and appoint Sam Allardyce, for example. He doesn't seem to be consistent with his through line of what he wants from Everton and what Everton offers to him as well, and what Everton can offer to players, playing staff, managers, etc. It just changes on a day-to-day basis.
And that, I think, Tom, is many businesses have highly influential shareholders, which is what you, and this is a shareholder, but it's the board who make the decisions.
Yeah.
And we've chatted on this before. He can have great influence on those four board members, mm-hmm. but ultimately they make the decision. You know, so you run the scenario, he panics because he can see Bramley Moore going down the drain if we get relegated or whatever it might be. And he instructs the chief exec or the director of football to dismiss the manager and get a better one.
Yeah.
They could say no. Now, he might then say, well, I'll dismiss you instead. Yeah. But we can't stop. We can't take comfort that it's all an individual's fault. Just because it's not the individual, the manager's fault, just on his own, it's also not Farhad Moshiri's, quote, fault, unquote, just on his own. Mm. Because ultimately, the board are tasked with running the business and acting in the interests of all shareholders, not just one. And he may be an eccentric, demanding billionaire, like many of them are, but they are the people who are making the decisions. And the decisions to date don't look as good as they should be. I mean, we sit here now on the 12th of December believing that our football club is going to submit a planning application for a new stadium this year. And they will. But being a bit flippant, 2359 on the 31st of December is this year. But we don't know what that means. And so all those other areas we've frequently talked about around communication, engagement and all those sorts of things, they still need huge improvements.
Well, Paul, let's move forward because I want to talk about the...
I think Paul had something to say there, though.
One more thing, Paul?
Well, it comes down to a lack of leadership in the organisation. Yeah. And, you know, 18 months ago, I was writing about this and people were throwing brickbats at me. And I'm not saying that to praise myself, but it's been evident all throughout. A good chairman, a good CEO would be talking to their difficult shareholder and saying, you know, we have to improve the following areas. Or, you know, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to act professionally. I'm going to represent the club, make public statements, et cetera, et cetera. And we have this enormous power vacuum at the top of the organization. Yes, we have people who are running the organization, but actually nobody's in control.
Well, and that's why we get this. Who needs to be counted then? Who needs to fill that power vacuum?
Well, I don't think, you know, at Bill's age, I don't expect Bill to change his behavior at all. I think, and again, you know, people will say, oh, this is just, you know, it's a personal comment. It's not. It then comes down to the CEO who has to fill the holes that are created by the absences above her. And if she doesn't, then we just continue in the manner in which we're continuing. And I think the last thing I'd say on this in terms of, you know, in the context of looking for a manager is, yes, Bill might be able to sell something to somebody, but ultimately that manager is going to perhaps look at the events of the last week, perhaps read articles like mine or read article like the articles in The Athletic and think, actually, is this an organization? No. Is this an organization that I want to be part of?
Yeah. Well, I want to move ahead and look to the future. Let's talk about the recruitment process. I just want to point out, I remember, John, we were sat in, I think it was the Wilmslow, about a year ago, and you made the comment to me that the day Sam Allardyce was appointed as Everton Football Club manager, part of the club died. Now, if we go back to the days of David Moyes, does the part of the club die a bit more?
If we appoint David Moyes, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Sherlock moment, I think, and we've spent however long we've been on, half an hour or so, whatever it is, talking about actually the mechanics of the way the business is operating being the problem, and those appointments or failed appointments of managers and the like are just the symptoms. And sadly, as I sit here today, because we're not going to fix those issues, which Paul was just talking about leadership and authority and decisiveness and perhaps, you know, dialogue and how decisions are made, if those decisions are going to be made the same way as we made the decision to dismiss the manager, the same way that we decided to appoint the manager in the first place, the same way we appointed the previous manager and paid him, you know, 18 months money for 6 months work and all that good stuff, then if we do get the right manager, it will be more by luck than judgment. Because we seem to be bouncing around, and we've gone 10 or 11 years with one manager and then four or five managers in 3 or 4 years, which is crazy. So, you know, following the same process and expecting a different outcome seems a bit crazy, doesn't it?
Does this one not seem a bit different to previous appointments, though, Paul? Because it's very scattergun, isn't it? There seems to be no number one name. It seems we've just kind of gone to every...
Well, we have to be careful that not everything you read in the media is actually true.
Well, I read 5 different things a day in the media, but do we not think this is slightly more scattergun? It doesn't seem to be a top target. It doesn't seem to be an obvious candidate, I guess. That's probably what kept Silver in the job for so long. But where's it going wrong, Paul?
Well, it appears to be going wrong if you read what's going on in the press. The truth is that we don't actually know whether it is going wrong or not. I think the difficulty is actually what is the brief? You know, what are we looking for here? Are we looking for, you know, an Angelotti type figure who is going to be a big name and will obviously appear to be fantastic, and it will re-energize the club and the fans will be very happy and everything else? But is he the right guy, for example, you know, to build a structure that the organization needs? Or are we going to go, you know, for somebody who's far less sort of sexy in inverted commas, but actually is very good structurally for the club, because he'll work well with the director of football, and we'll have a proper academy, and we'll have a proper under-23s that are all integrated. And we have a business then that, you know, develops players and sells them for a nice profit, which allows us to do great things in the first team, etc. That all may take 3 or 4 years. The fact is that we don't know what it is that Mashiri wants. We don't know whether Mashiri is just like, you know, we've got to get somebody that's very exciting in because we need to sell all the season tickets next year, and because, you know, we need to be seen as being, you know, one of the Hollywood clubs in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. Or actually whether or not he's making, you know, a sensible strategic decision that says, We're in a bit of a mess financially because of the bad decisions that we've made in the past. Therefore, we need a person that can work within financial constraints and, you know, take the organisation forward on a structured basis. We don't know that, and I wonder whether the people inside the club know that. I genuinely can't answer that question.
Well, John, do you think that if we win on Sunday, Duncan Ferguson's got a kind of 100% win record after 2 games, one of them being away at Old Trafford, one of them being against a good Chelsea side, do you not think he throws his hat in? And because I'm just thinking of watching Howard's Way, and every Everton winning trophy manager has had a background as a player at Everton. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people cringe at the idea of Ferguson being in charge on a permanent basis, but do you not think he buys the club a lot of time with a win on Sunday?
I mean, we were talking offline earlier, and we were talking about the under-23s and David Unsworth.
Yeah.
You know, and I was throwing out the question, why is he still here? And perhaps some people with more influence than I would say, because he's got to want to leave, to go and further his career and perhaps come back in a future day or whatever. Same applies for Ferguson. I don't think he wants the job permanently, because I think he's a sensible, you know, the public image of drunken, disorderly, and all, that's 20 years out of date. You know, this is a highly qualified coach who has got all those badges and things, has worked under 3 or 4 managers, or maybe 5 or whatever it is, has got experience in that sense, but he's not ready for that big job. And I think perhaps the fear would be, sounds daft this, but that he does a Solskjaer-type thing. Clearly, he's buying the club time by doing a good job last week, and hopefully he'll do a good job this Sunday, in just from a performance point of view, and the outcome will be whatever it is. But I don't know whether we are taking advantage of that time. An alternative reality could be that Brands knows exactly what he's doing. He's engaging with those people. They decided back in May, June, if this happens again, this is what we're going to do. That all those journalists are just either spinning a yarn because their editors require them to, or are misinterpreting the little side conversations they're getting, or maybe we're deliberately pushing out disinformation so that we can do our business quietly like we always have done in the past. So loads of if buts there, yeah? Duncan Ferguson ending up as the manager will probably, say to the end of the season, for example, would be quite clearly there was no plan. Yeah. I mean, I think many of us might think there wasn't one anyway.
All plans change, you know.
I mean, maybe the plan was to appoint the first team coach.
Yeah.
But at the moment, the danger is that, and Duncan is a different character, but we already are into deja vu or, you know, Groundhog Day stuff of what we did to Unsworth, one game at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so whether those players who weren't putting in the right shifts previously, you all got invigorated for a one-off last weekend. Let's see whether they respond again.
Yeah.
Because one game at a time is not a way. And that means we have Franny Jeffers, who's, if he's got any badges, they're the early ones, and John Ebrill, who are down in the age group ranks, you know, running a football club from a playing side.
I mean, it was extraordinary to see on Saturday. There were performances there from certain individuals that I haven't seen at all in the last 3-4 years of them being at the club. Morgan Schneiderlin looked a different player playing for Ferguson.
Well, that's when you get into tactics and strategy. Yeah,
I'm talking about the I've always been a proponent of the idea that a manager's not that important as the playing staff. But I think you saw on Saturday, actually, it does make a significant difference. I'm happy to be wrong on that one. But, Paul, there's no one out there, is there, that will be universally acclaimed by the fan base. So how does the club negotiate that to keep them happy?
You would expect, Paul gets his thoughts together, you would expect good managers, the ones we might want because we want a good one, would be in a job already.
Yeah.
You know, and many of the people that are getting chucked about as names are either in China or unemployed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that can't be part of your strategy, can it? Because, yeah. Anyway, sorry, Paul. Go for it, mate.
It's interesting, isn't it? And you make a good point because almost everybody that you might think would be a good candidate, as you say, is probably already employed and probably already enjoying a successful season. And it's a very hard sell, isn't it, to pull somebody out of a successful club or a successful season to go to a club that's not having a successful season in mid-season. So I can imagine there are a number of people who, either in the UK or in Europe or even elsewhere, who are having successful seasons at the moment, and they're saying to Everton's representatives, yes, we might be interested, but we're not going to be interested until the end of the season. So Everton are faced with, a really difficult situation here. I think taking Duncan Ferguson, and I know if people just hear me say this, they'll instantly think I'm wrong. Having Duncan Ferguson on board is a very high-risk strategy. It's high-risk because, not because of him as an individual, it's high-risk because he's unproven. The team around him, as you say, John, is unproven at this level. And one doesn't really know whether he has the tactical experience to see us through a season, as against just having the ability to inject adrenaline into people, which is effectively what happened on Saturday. I mean, Saturday was just sort of like a throwback, wasn't it? The tactics that we deployed were a throwback to football of many years ago. 4-4-2, you know, goalkeeper kicking the ball as far as he possibly could up to, you know, an old-fashioned number nine. And it was magnificent to watch, and it was exciting and thrilling. And it probably confused the hell out of Chelsea, at least for a period of time. And I just wonder if that became our standard operating practice for the rest of the season under Duncan Ferguson, whether clubs wouldn't work us out very, very quickly. And then if they did...
Well, cyclical, though.
So just one thing. And if they did, whether or not we'd have the depth of experience in the management team to make changes to adjust to how people would play against us.
Well, football's cyclical is my point, Paul. You're saying, you know, 4-4-2 might get found out very quickly. These are players brought up on 4-2-3-1 and 4-3-3s and 3-5-2s. And, you know, you never know that 4-4-2 might become a kind of revolutionary move in some kind of paradoxical way. It's something that players aren't used to. It's a management style that will. Is it Alex Ferguson says football goes in 15-year cycles?
Don't know.
And you know, maybe we are entering that next new cycle. And my second point being the adrenaline thing. I think that is a lot of what top managers do, isn't it? Watching that extraordinary documentary, All or Nothing. I regard Pep Guardiola as greatest manager of all time.
It's quite good.
But his skill for me seems to be getting world-class players up for it. It's that simple. Just getting them determined to go out and win games, getting them to play in a way that doesn't pander to their egos, ignores the fact they're prima donnas. He gets world-class players playing for the badge. And that's what, well, I'm not saying the players are necessarily world-class at Everton. They should be if they're playing in the Premier League. And Ferguson seemed to get them up for it.
I think
that's what we should be looking for.
You know, because this is the clues in the name, business matters.
Yeah.
We could actually talk for quite a long time about this bit.
Yeah.
And it's actually, you know, also how businesses operate as well. Yeah. I mean, I said before, people don't fail, companies do. Yeah. Paul's talking about leadership. All those things apply on and off the field. And again, if we focus down on a single individual, can the manager repeat what he did? Yeah. Most organisations, the real change in the business that needs to be done or how you operate and its values and so on are typically hidden from view. Yeah. What you see is the marketing, yeah, and the engagement with your customers and communication and those sorts of things. And what we saw last week was fundamentally a seismic shift in expression of how we're going to be perceived, which is enthusiasm, excited, adrenaline driven, and so on. What we didn't see was what the manager did over a couple of days on a training field, where he fundamentally looked at the players that he had and thought, what's the best way to play to get the best out of these players? And it isn't to have Michael Keane standing in the penalty box receiving the ball from Jordan Pickford. Yeah. Now, clearly that style, which is very much a direct style, may or may not work every single game. It may or may not work at the weekend. And I think Paul is implying, he's saying, we don't know if Duncan Ferguson has the technical nous or the strategic nous to adapt and change to suit, you know, the team that we're playing. Well, as he's got all the qualifications that all these other managers got, he's certainly had the theory expressed to him in the past. He's had the luxury of seeing Silva in action, Allardyce in action, who he speaks very highly of, yeah, Koeman in action, Martinez as well, who appointed the man. But it doesn't change the business bit that we've been talking about for a while now, which is if you're trying to attract a senior executive to this football club, and the one we're talking about is the manager, then in business terms, this is a business whose assets are not being utilised properly.
Yeah.
Probably means that the business is undervalued in the sense that its output isn't consistent with what it should be capable of. And therefore, for the right type of executive, perhaps a guy who thinks he's going to be big, but hasn't got the experience or the evidential CV and all that good stuff to get the Man City job or the Man United job or whatever, then this is a great opportunity, because whoever follows it after Duncan will hopefully have players who have demonstrated they can perform if they want to.
Yeah.
And that makes the new manager's job that little bit easier, because if they then turn it off, you move them on, don't you? Yeah. So I just think, as ever, and it's a classic, if we want to be this Champions League type club, so that's a journey. You know, if I wanted to go there, I wouldn't be starting from here.
Yeah.
And I think the most damning thing here is that we are where we were 3 years ago, perhaps worse, because we're going to announce huge losses, significant debt, spunged a lot of bloody money on players who are going to be out of contract soon and have not delivered anything. And we're still having debates about what is the Everton way? Mm. What kind of manager do we want to recruit? What style of football are we going to have? We've got a director of football who's been here long enough now to have made some material changes, and word on the streets as he's about to press the button on that. So we can anticipate, one hopes, that we'll recognise that the development squad at Finch Farm, which is the under-23s, should be about development, not about winning that competition. And we should see players coming through into our first team squad, or not just going out on loan, but being sold for money to try and close some of these losses.
Yeah.
This is all strategic business planning we're talking about. And there's no sign that if we have done that, that we're able to measure progress against it. And so hence the deja vu, Groundhog Day type behaviours that we're seeing.
Well, and also it's worth pointing out that the media reaction to this job, it's reminded me of how big a football club Everton actually is. Because I think every week, every day in the past week, we've been the top story on BBC Sport for one rumour or another. I know Phil McNulty is an Everton fan himself, but and The Guardian, we've been quite high up.
The Athletic have been doing two or three articles every day, and Paul's appeared in some of those.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening now is the media, whatever that means, are starting to pick up and actually do mainstream articles on the things that this podcast has been saying for 2 years.
Just a shame they've monetized it first.
Yeah. You know, we've been saying this thing for 2 years, and now the world is waking up to it and thinking, you know, actually, was it Simon Hughes? Was it the one you were quoted in, Paul?
It was Simon Hughes yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, Simon's basically fundamentally saying, yeah, you can change the manager, but unless you fix all these other things,
yeah,
then you're going to be back where you started. And he's actually put a performance metric saying beat Liverpool regularly,
yeah,
which is an interesting approach, because if you put a KPI in place, that can sound a bit, you know, bitter, beat them. But the things you would have to put in place to make sure you can regularly beat them would get you to where you want to be.
You know what? I've said that from about 15 years old. You know, that's ridiculous. Yeah, you know, it's ridiculous that we're arriving at this point where I'm saying, no, if you want to change the whole ethos of football, of the football club, go to Anfield in the Cup in January and win, and you change the entire outlook of the football club. We talk about the Everton way. Paul, don't you think Saturday was the closest you've seen to, inverted commas, the Everton way since Farhad's taken over?
Certainly since Farhad's taken over. I wasn't there, but I was trying to think of the last time that I witnessed some, you know, an occasion like that, a Goodison. Actually, Farhad was there because it was the first game that he attended. The Chelsea Cup game in 2016.
It was vibrant that day. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
4-0 against that maybe?
No, the Chelsea one was a biggie.
Yeah.
When Lukaku scored that amazing goal at the street end.
Yeah.
I think the word that comes to mind for me about Saturday was intensity. There was an intensity about the club, about the occasion, about everything, that has been missing for such a long time. And that's what, I think for me, that's what drew it all together, and that's what created the event that they became.
Intensity, Paul, like, for me, there was an aggression, and that was fighting for every ball. And that on-pitch aggression, I think, needs to be taken off the pitch in a really helpful way. They need to be fighting for every single decision to be the correct one. And it seems what's the antithesis of aggression? Passive, I guess. That there's a passiveness to the club at board level that filters down to the playing staff. I'm a huge believer in that.
Yeah, I agree. And we often talk in a sporting sense that the very best at any sport make it look easy. They always seem to have time, particularly footballers. The best footballers always seem to have time. And the best managers, and I think Guardiola is particularly good at this, and Mourinho is as well, is they're able to distill the complexity of how we're going to play, into, no disrespect to the individuals, into simple messages that footballers can understand.
Klopp as well,
yeah,
to his credit.
And I think whilst people don't know Duncan, I mean, I think last week was quite enlightening for a lot of people. Certainly it moved a fair number away from the he just puts out the cones, yeah. But he's a really considered, thoughtful, experienced football coach who chose how we were going to play, gave the message simply to the players and told them to do it.
Yeah.
And they did. And the messaging coming out of the club afterwards, oh, you always get the, you know, wasn't it great? And we love Duncan and all that sort of stuff. But the consistent messages were around that simplicity.
Well, yeah? I think that individual
players knew exactly what was expected of them.
I think in many ways, Silva is a good representative of the club at board level. Because there was a lot of talk, particularly in The Athletic, of players being really confused by his messages and the introversion often being taken out on himself and it being a very complicated thing he was trying to achieve. Like, I mean, watch how we mark from a corner. It's incredibly complicated. And I think the players, I've watched, you know, most games this season, if not all, and they have looked confused on the pitch. They've looked like they've played within themselves because they've been unsure of the next decision to make. And Saturday, there was a beautiful simplicity to it. Win every ball, fight for every ball, get the ball forward. That was all it was. And Paul, moving forward, do you think that simplicity of decision making can be taken to the board?
Absolutely has to. Sorry, Paul, go. Absolutely. I mean, that speech you just did could be, we need simple strategy at board level. Yeah. Clearly, there's complexity beneath it about how you enable it and deliver the outcomes. But the classic, you know, vision statement, it's got to be there.
And it's about trusting individuals.
Absolutely.
To be
well, it's empowerment. It's all those things, Sorry, Paul, go, mate.
I think well, to be honest, you just answered it. I suppose you might hope that the board and Mr. Mashiri, they actually take a lesson from Saturday, and they take a lesson actually from Duncan Ferguson himself, and maybe they need to adjust and their behaviour and adopt, as you say, some of the principles that he brought into Saturday. You know, a clarity of purpose, a clarity of vision, albeit very a very simple message, because we sure as hell we need that clarity, which we don't have at the moment, I repeat myself endlessly, but it comes back to having clarity at the very top. And unless we know where we want to go, we're never going to get there.
Well, I think the stadium's a good example, isn't it, John? We know where we want to go, but it's the getting there that has lacked the simplicity, hasn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, again, it's inevitably, when we do this, because I don't know how many episodes of this goddamn thing we've done. It must be 50 or 60. And the theme has always been around, you know, forward thinking, objectives, communication, engagement. All those things would still hugely benefit from being done better.
Yeah.
You know, we know the stadium, because you call that as an example, and that becomes something on the critical path for the business, that we're going to submit a planning application this year. Okay, let's just assume that's going to happen. Liverpool City Council are not going to look at it till next year, because the last planning meeting of this year has been and gone. Yeah. So, but we can't do another one of my sound bites, this flocking behaviour of we're trying to find a new manager, so everyone's focusing on that. And everyone might just be those two or three very senior executives who are involved in all decision making. And that then requires additional bandwidth, which we've talked about in the past on this podcast. And it requires empowerment, which we've talked about on this podcast. And it requires trust, which we've talked about on this podcast. That's trust in the individuals you have in post to deliver against the objectives that you have set for them, and trust in the fan base. And all those things need improving.
Yeah.
Absolutely need improving. Otherwise, if we're still doing this podcast 2 years from now, we'll be having these same conversations.
I will. Looking at us to wrap up, we're nearly hitting the hour mark. So, Paul, have you got any last thoughts you want to make on the podcast? Not in.
Just to say that the article I did before the last one, I called it Critical Times, and I said that the next, and I did that, I think, at the end of November, and I said that the next 2 months would allow us to know far more about the club than we did then. And I just think it is critical times for us. There are so many things that we need to get right in a very short period of time. And on the evidence of previous decisions, I still wonder about our ability to get those things right. So it's certainly not going to be a boring Christmas and early New Year for Evertonians.
Say that last bit again, Paul.
I said it's certainly not going to be a boring Christmas and New Year for Evertonians.
Okay. I mean, so those last 2 months, I mean, I've got an observation I want to make, but I just want to ask a question because you're referring to some of your articles and I think you've tweeted around this as well. Those things that need to be done, and I'm probably setting you up here so you can either knock it out of the park or do what you like with it. I think you've said they can't be done whilst Bill and Denise are both at board level. Haven't you? Haven't you said they need to be replaced?
They do need to be replaced, absolutely.
Okay. So if we look at the board itself, you might as well vote for the other two. Should Ryzantsev be replaced as well?
I don't think there's evidence either way at this moment in time about whether he does a great job or he doesn't. I think you can point at the commercial performance of the club, which is still struggling, but then you have to ask yourself whether or not he's the right person to be doing the commercial stuff, because at the end of the day, his background and his experience is in banking. I think when we know how the stadium is going to be funded and whether or not we can replace the short-term debt that we currently have with rights and media funding with a proper banking facility, such as the one that we had with ICBC, if he manages to achieve both of those things in the next few months, then I don't think anybody should have a problem with him. I think Marcel Brands also has to.
I was going to work my way through them. So yeah. Brands is the next one, yeah?
I think also Marcel Brands has to step up now and absolutely demonstrate that he has the qualities that we thought he had when he came here. And to be fair to him, the qualities that were evident at his time with PSV. So it is, you know, it's a critical time for the organisation, but it's a critical time for every individual who has a leadership role within the organisation. And really, there should be no hiding place. And if any of those four fail to do what it is that they have to do in the next few months, then they should face the consequences of that.
Are they not, as a board, and this is a leading question because you probably know what I think the answer is, are they not just individually but also collectively accountable for what's going on?
Yes, totally they are. And I hope at the annual general meeting, people will ask questions of them, not only in terms of justifying what it is that they've done in the last year, but what it is that they're going to do differently in the forthcoming year in order to get different outcomes.
Well, for me, one of the things that they need to do differently is more effectively manage the largest shareholder. And I think they, as a group and individually, they need to be brave and they need to actually exercise the authority that they have, that they legally have, and to down with the consequences. And the only consequence they can suffer is the largest shareholder doesn't like what they're doing and he removes them. Yeah. My own view, because it's only fair, is that that board needs to be upgraded. It needs additional people added to it with experience in particular areas. And I think if we look at what we have at the moment, and I will paraphrase, we have Brands, who's the director of football. So let's say, yes, he goes to board meetings, but realistically, apart from any normal person who would have a comment if he heard things, he's really focused on the footballing side. If we have a finance and commercial director at board level who is going to be lauded if he manages to get to borrow 500 million quid, frankly, I don't think that's enough to justify being at board level. Yeah, he needs to do a lot more than just go and get herself, borrow some money for us and the like. We have a chairperson who isn't engaged on a day-to-day basis, but is engaged at every single major decision. And that is, for some people, a legacy issue. And we have a chief exec, and let's not go through it all again, of background and history, who appears to have to do everything else. So my last bit for my last bit is, again, we talked a long time ago on this podcast about a lack of management bandwidth. And I think what we are seeing today in and around managers and other matters is just a symptom of that lack of management bandwidth at the top level. And it needs to be improved. It needs to be enhanced, and it needs to be done soon.
Well, thanks, John. Thanks, Paul. Just to be honest with the listeners, I haven't written a usual close because these are uncertain times. If you told me that 5 years ago that Trump would be in the White House, that we were leaving the European Union, and that Duncan Ferguson, under the guise of a billionaire, was leading Everton out at Old Trafford, I'd have said that if you gave you an enema, you'd be buried in a matchbox. But here we are. Who knows what the future brings for Everton? We could have a new manager by tomorrow, or Duncan could be leading us to a league title by 2023. We could have Jeremy Corbyn in number 10, leading us to a socialist state, or we could have Scotland separated with Nicola Sturgeon as their president. All is to be decided in the next week, and we'll see what the future has in store. All I hope is that the future's bright and that the future's blue. Good luck to all the fans travelling to Old Trafford on Sunday. And as we always say on Everton Business Matters, it's not what you do, it's the way that you do it. And that's what gets results.